That, of course, the classic Mike Post theme to one of the all-time great police dramas, Hill Street Blues. Joining me on the phone now is the man who created that show, along with NYPD Blue and L.A. Law and even Cop Rock and many others along the way, and is the author of a new book called Death by Hollywood. Here is Stephen Bochco. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, God. That's a great piece of music, isn't it?
It really is. How did you hook up with Mike Post in the first place?
You know, I've known Mike, closing in on 30 years. When Steve Cannell and I created a little show in the 70s called Richie Brockman and Private Eye, Mike and Steve were friends, and so we all got together, and Mike and his then partner Pete Carpenter wrote a song as the theme of the show, and Mike and I have been really close friends ever since.
And now you have followed Steve Cannell, who's also been on this show, into the world of writing books. How different is that from writing TV screenplays?
Well, it's entirely different. It's like apples and oranges. It was a wonderful experience for me. I enjoyed it immensely. I mean, it's such a pleasure when you spend your whole career writing television, and you're in a very collaborative medium, and you know you've got censors to deal with and rigid format constraints, and people with opinions and network guys and all that stuff. But when you sit and write a book, it's just yours.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing it for a payday. You're just doing it for the fun and the pleasure of it, and it's just a wonderful different way of working.
So did that allow you to make the love scenes sexier, or what did you do that would be different if this were a TV show?
Well, clearly, you know, first of all, it's a much more complex, lengthier story than you could fit into an hour's television drama.
Yep.
Obviously, the sexuality of the book is a lot more explicit. There's language in the book that you could never use on television. And more than any of that, you have the opportunity to kind of access characters internally, you know, what they're thinking, what motivates them. You can, because you have a narrative voice in the book, you can digress a little bit and become sort of anecdotal and then come back to your main storyline. As a writer, it's just very liberating.
Yeah, that notion of a character thinking, not very good on screen, much better on paper.
No. you always have to move that story ball down the field, scene by scene by scene.
Yep.
And it doesn't allow for a lot of digression.
You talked about being able to use franker language in a book. When you created NYPD Blue, you kind of pushed the boundaries of what network television could say and show. Did you specifically design NYPD Blue to be that?
Yes. Yes, that wasn't an accident. We felt if we were going to do another cop drama at a time when the hour drama in general was not very successful, that we needed to compete more directly with cable and pay services for eyeballs, because all those movies were going on cable, and we just couldn't compete with the language and the sexuality. And so NYPD Blue really was designed to at least begin to approach that level of writing.
Do you find it ironic that now, after, what is it, a decade that show's been on the air now?
Yeah, this is our 11th year.
That you're not the edgy TV show anymore.
That's correct. Isn't that something?
So what do you do? Can you still push boundaries on that show, or do you have to come up with something new that goes beyond even current boundaries, if such a thing is possible?
Well, periodically we push a little bit at the boundaries, but honestly, I'm pretty comfortable with what we do on NYPD Blue. I've never really wanted to push at the boundaries just to push at the boundaries. I always felt that if you're going to do a cop show, you'd want to access more realistically the kind of language that you would hear in a detective squad and on the streets. And we've got that.
Yep.
And so I'm pretty comfortable with what we're doing.
How long was the meeting in which you decided to show Sipowicz's butt?
Well, there was no meeting. Maybe there should have been. But, what we did on NYPD Blue before it ever went on the air is we really negotiated the parameters of language and nudity. And once we had that, it was just a matter of whatever we decided to write and whoever we decided to write it for. you got to take the good with bad, Paul.
I know, but and by the way, bad would be Dennis Franz's butt at that time. But did you have to do a lot of talking to him about it? I mean, I know.
Dennis, you know, he couldn't get those pants off fast.
You know, I remember before the show even went on the air, there was so much controversy about it because the information leaked out that you had nudity clauses in your contract,
which right,
for TV was unheard of, and there were stations around the country that wouldn't air it at the time,
right.
all of which built up the hype for the show, which was great. And then the show came on the air. Were you surprised that it was so quickly accepted, considering how much pressure there had been?
Well, I was thrilled. I don't know that I was surprised because I knew it was a wonderful show,
yeah.
and we had gotten all of that amazing publicity. I'm not sure all of it was wanted, but we got it. But the good news was that had that show not jumped out the way it did, virtually, you know, from the first episode on, I don't think we would have survived more than three or four episodes because we were under enormous assault from the religious right and from you know, so many of the ABC affiliates who are just scared to death to air us.
Are there any ABC affiliates that still don't air that show?
No.
They're all on board.
Oh, yeah. And have been for years and years.
You got them ratings, and so they said, okay, let's go.
Well, of course, the Republic didn't fall, you know, and we won Emmys, and people began to realize that really what was special about NYPD Blue wasn't, you know, the occasional swear word or the occasional but. It was that we had compelling characters and great stories.
Yeah. So speaking of Emmys, I think that was what saved Hill Street Blues. The first year it was on the air, I was a big fan from the first episode. But unfortunately, you didn't have enough people watching that year. But NBC stuck with you. And then at the end of that year, NBC, I'll remember this forever, NBC was broadcasting the Emmys. And you guys won a bunch of them, and they were on the air with live promos. Congratulations to Hill Street for two Emmys. The next one, for three Emmys, for however many Emmys
you won. We wound up winning eight Emmys that night, and it was extraordinary.
It was unbelievable. That's what launched the show into success in its second season, correct?
There's no question. No question. It was probably the most exciting night of my life.
Now, I got to ask you about Hill Street as a longtime fan of the show. Renko died in the pilot.
Yes, he did.
But he's back in the second episode. What was the explanation for that? There was never one given on the show.
The miracle of television.
I know, but was it that you liked Charles Hayde so much?
Actually, the reason, you know, in the script, he was always originally killed, and Charlie had done another pilot, you know, for another network. And then when that pilot didn't sell, and ours did, he called and said, oh, you know, can I be on the show? And so we literally went back in to this pilot film and changed it so that they survived. So the pilot that aired, you know, he didn't die in that pilot.
He got shot and pretty badly hit, but
right, and then survived.
Yeah, and then miraculously the next week, okay,
there he was.
Let's be careful out there. Was that because that was such a large ensemble? Was it hard to cast?
You know, the only role that was really hard, because we cast a lot of people in that show who I'd worked with in the past, who are friends of mine from college, you know, and we'd worked on other shows. So I really had a lot of those people in mind, you know, Jim Sicking and Bruce Weitz and Keel Martin and Michael Warren and Charlie Hayde. The only role that was really hard to cast was Veronica. You know, Veronica was we had already started shooting the pilot when we met Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the last hire. And you know, if it hadn't been her, I don't know what we would have done.
Is it important for an actress who comes into an almost all-male situation like that to have something extra?
Well, she certainly did. you know, and if you remember that pilot, there was a wonderful moment when she walks into that squad room and traverses the room, and everything just kind of stops.
Yes.
And people just sort of stare at her. And she was a woman of uncommon beauty.
Yep.
And still is. And to see that woman in that seedy environment really was a showstopper.
As I recall, there was a phone ringing in the squad room, and nobody was answering
it
because they were all paying attention.
Dead quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. So with all these shows through all these years, you've had relationships on the screen with police and lawyers. Do you have to know these people off screen as well? Have you gotten to know cops and they've told you their stories?
Oh, sure. We listen, on NYPD Blue, one of our executive producers is a retired homicide detective from New York, Bill Clark, who, you know, in many ways is just so inspirational to us. And you know, we've learned so much, you know, through our association and friendship with Bill. And Bill, about four times a year, brings out groups of detectives from New York. And, you know, we sit around and we pick their brains and steal their anecdotes. You know, it's wonderful.
Was the first time you wrote a cop story back in the days you were working on Columbo?
Yeah, that was the first pure cop show that I ever worked on.
That but had to be fun to work on.
Oh, it was great. You know, Peter was wonderful, and the guys who created and produced that show, you know, Richard Levinson and Bill Link, were real mentors to me, and they taught me a great deal about writing and storytelling. It was wonderful.
When you work on a show like that, where there's obviously a Columbo formula, is it written down somewhere, or do they just say, look, watch last week's episode and write this week's episode?
Well, you know, the guys who created it certainly knew what the formula was, and it was very rigid, and you didn't have to write it down. We all knew what it was, mm-hmm. and, you know, you had to see the crime first. You know, they were very specific do's and don'ts in creating that show and creating the episodes for that show, and it must have been a great formula, because Peter's still making Columbos 30 years later.
Yeah, he is. I got to talk about another actor you worked with. You did a show several years ago called Hooperman, starring the now late John Ritter.
Right.
Talk about your relationship with him.
Well, we were very close. You know, John was a wonderful, wonderful guy to work with. I mean, he was such a good spirit and a collaborative spirit. And, you know, you never got a sense of, you know, gee, I'm the star, back off. I mean, John just showed up to work every day and showed up to help. And, you know, he was such an amazing creative force in the company and on the stage. It was just fun to go to work with John every day. And we laughed, we giggled, we had a great time. We took vacations together. And I mean, he was just a great, great guy.
Every single person I've talked to who knew him says exactly that.
It's true.
I mean, talk about a guy who apparently had no enemies. John Ritter was that guy.
No, he was a dear, dear, wonderful man.
Yeah. Let's go back to the book, Death by Hollywood, which is, tell people what the basic plot of this book is.
Well, in a nutshell, it's about a screenwriter who's fallen on really hard times, and his marriage is on the ropes, and he's drinking too much, and his agent fires him, and, you know, he's got writer's block, and he's spying on his neighbors from the balcony of his home in Beverly Hills, in the Hollywood Hills, through a telescope. And he spies a couple having rather vigorous sex, and what he realizes is he knows who the woman is, and the man she's having sex with is not her husband. And he watches as they then commence to argue, and they get into a terrible brawl, and it gets physical, and she winds up picking up an acting trophy and bopping him over the head with it and killing him. And instead of picking up the phone and doing what you or I would do, which is call the police, he decides this would be a great hook for a screenplay that'll kind of resurrect his career. And so he winds up insinuating himself into the lives of the principal characters. He gets really close to the investigating homicide detective and develops an interesting friendship with him. And he winds up having an affair with the woman who committed the murder. And the story complicates from there, and it's funny, and it's really well plotted.
And it's a true story based on something you saw through your own telescope.
Oh, absolutely. How did you know? How did you guess?
Is this going to be a movie?
Well, I hope eventually, yeah. You know, I have adapted it to, you know, into screenplay form. I did that this past summer. And, you know, we've been talking about pulling that together. And so if ever that happens, it'll be a lot of fun.
And is there a new Stephen Bochco TV project on the horizon?
Yeah, we're developing several shows for next year already. You know, this season's sort of seen an awful lot of carnage.
Yep.
So we're developing a show for ABC, and we're developing a show for NBC, and it'll be nice if we can get one to stick to the wall.
Cops or lawyers?
Cops. Cops.
You certainly know how to tell their stories, and you have through the years. Thank you for all the great work, and thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Paul.
The book is called Death by Hollywood. Stephen Bochco, the man who created NYPD Blue and L.A. Law and even Cop Rock, which I didn't ask him about because we're all out of time here. But the book is Death by Hollywood. Glad to have him on the show here today on the Big 550 KTRS.